Okay, I think we're ready to go now for another morning talk. And so far on these morning talks, I've given you the Rolls-Royce method of meditation, just kindfulness, just letting go, and being aware, being kind, and seeing the whole process grow quite naturally. And that's certainly the way I meditate. When I was a young monk, I used to try and watch the breath. Sometimes you succeed, sometimes you fail. But I found that when I looked back into how the Buddha taught, he saw that this is a method of meditation which has to be kind, which has to have a lot of letting go, which is not exerting the will, but actually pushing aside the will and just letting the whole process be. All those words of the great master Ajahn Chah, sitting under the mango tree, the words that we come here to let go, not to attain. All those words that the nature of the mind is to be still. It only moves and gets agitated because of us, we get involved. All of those teachings at first didn't make any sense. I always thought you had to sort of focus on something if you wanted to get still. And so I taught the best method of meditation. However, you'll all find that it's not very easy to let go, because we're in the habit of always doing things. We're in the habit of always trying to control things. So it's one of the hardest things for a human being to do. What should be the easiest, just to leave things alone and let go. And so because it's difficult, that out of kindness to you, especially those who've got frustrated, they haven't been able to get very far in meditation so far. Out of great compassion, I'm now going to let you do something. Not that much. We used to have this routine in the monastery over the road. During the rains retreat, 3 months retreat, there's no chores to be done. We give the monks, you can clean the toilets, you can sweep the paths, but any time of the day you wanted. If you wanted to do it, you can do it at midnight, if that's when you wanted to do it. Do it, whenever you felt you needed to. But there was so little work there because that monastery over the road is low maintenance, not much painting or stuff to be done. And so because of that, some monks by 3 or 4 weeks would go crazy. There's nothing to do. Please give me something to do. So because it was cold and because we had wood fires, we'd always saw up a few logs of wood so that a monk who's restless could always chop those into the right length and size to go into the fire. And it was almost a fight to be the one who chopped the wood. Because that's what sometimes it's like, give me something to do, I'm going crazy, I need to do something. Because that's our bad habits. So those of you who are just relaxing and getting peaceful, and starting to get some fun in the meditation, then you don't really have to listen to this talk. But those of you who do want to do something, I'm now going to introduce, after all these days, the breath meditation. Now, this is also on purpose, because I certainly know when I try to do breath meditation as a young monk, even as a young man, usually I'd sit down and start watching the breath straight away, without any preparation. And just basic, your mind wasn't ready to watch the breath. And the only way you could watch it is to hold it very tightly. Otherwise, your thoughts would be coming in, you go to sleep, or other sort of fantasies would come in. It was so hard to watch the breath, basically because you hadn't prepared the mind. The mind was just too restless, or the body was too tired. So on a retreat like this, I told you to let go. This is for everybody at the beginning of the retreat. And then while you're relaxed, now you haven't had much to do. You got used to doing less than you normally do. Now you'll find if you do the standard breath meditation technique, it's not that hard to do anymore. Simply because the obstacles, the things which stop people watching the breath, have all been dealt with. You're relaxed. Hopefully, you've slept enough by now that your body feels really quite relaxed. You know, you had enough sleep, you got some energy coming up. Those people who sleep a lot from this time on, yeah, it may be because you really do need a bit more sleep, but sometimes you should check whether it's just boredom is the reason why you're going to sleep. I'm not saying that's for everybody. Some of you need a few more days. You still haven't caught up on the sleep your body needs. But one of the other reasons why people go to bed is just to escape. They're bored. They've got nothing to do. Oh, God, do I have to do another day of this? Up the road in the prison, I used to go and teach up there regularly. They used to have a saying, one extra hour of sleep is 1 hour off your sentence. Because it was a very unpleasant place to be inside a prison. So they'd try and sleep as much as they possibly could. And then when they were asleep, they weren't in jail. So you might think this place is a prison, is a jail. It's not really. You know, you're free to escape whenever you like. But sometimes the sleep can be an escape from boredom. So be careful about that. But you should have had enough rest now. You should have enough being able to accommodate to the routine of this place. You should be really pretty much relaxed and your mind should be pretty sort of free. So if now you start doing things like watching the breath, yeah, it is doing something. It's not the Rolls Royce of meditation. It's like the Thai tuk-tuk of meditation. But if that's all you could do, that's good enough. So what you actually start to do, you sit down. Standard procedure of relaxing the body, first of all, with kindfulness. So do that. Make that the first level of the meditation. Because when you start saying levels or stages of meditation, people think, oh, at last, I've got stages, I've got something to do, I've got a map, I know what I'm supposed to do next. Because that's what you do in life. You know, you go grade one, grade two, grade three. At least you know where you are in school. And you go in your work, you know, level one, level two, level three in your work. We all got these grades and stuff like that, which we're used to. So I'm pandering, you know, to that psychology which you have. So like level one is being with the body and relaxing it so it feels really, really good, but awake. So mindfulness and kindness, seeing all the different parts of the body and being able to relax this, relax that. So the body gets reasonably relaxed. Enough so it's not going to disturb you. If you're going to be watching the breath and you've got sort of an itch in your shoulder, you have to keep scratching it, or you've got an ache in your body, you have to keep fidgeting your bottom. I often tell people that the reason, if you go to any of these very old Buddhist temples anywhere in the world, the old ones, this is a new one, a very old one, you will see they all have highly polished wooden floors. And the reason why those floors, the monks don't need to polish them. The reason they got highly polished, whether it's during meditation or during a Dhamma talk or any ceremony, the people who sit on the floor are always fidgeting. And every time they move with their fat bums, they end up polishing the floor. And even after a few years, you guys moving backwards and forwards. You can imagine, because very highly polished. Because people always fidget. So you don't want to have to fidget. You know, if you need to, you must. But it'd be great if you don't need to. You can just sit there with your body perfectly relaxed so you can attend to something like your breath. Now, for those of you who've done breath meditation before, you know you watch the breath go in and out and then you're off somewhere else. You know, thinking about all sorts of unnecessary stuff. If you ever get lost in a train of thought afterwards, you say, was that really useful? Did you learn anything? Did you gain anything? Did you get anywhere? Did you solve any problems? And the answer always is, no. You know, most of your thinking is a total 100% waste of time. It's just we got used to it, that's all. It's just like, you know, watching a soap opera on the TV. Only you're watching it in your head instead. It doesn't really get you anywhere. So one of the things which I did to remember when you had any sort of thoughts or trains of thoughts was say, so what? So what? So what? So what? That soon stopped a lot of thinking. Or the other thing was to say, none of my business, none of my business, none of my business. If you're still getting lost in thought, then actually how can you really say, none of my business? There is a very good meditation technique so that you can detach from your thinking. And once you're detached from your thinking, you can let it go very easily. And that is the simile of the cinema, or these days watching the movies on your big TV screens. I remember when I used to go to the cinema as a young man. You'd be watching some horror movie or some drama, and there'd be some either monster or the gangster was creeping up behind the hero with the gun. And always, every time, someone in the audience would shout out, "Hey, look behind you." And this was crazy. It was a movie. You know, that was shot years ago. The person can't hear you. It's the same these days. You know, you go, you know, through Singapore Airport and I pass these big screens there. They've got some soccer on. And people watch and say, "Shoot, shoot, shoot, pass the ball." That soccer match is happening thousands of miles away. And they can't hear you. So why is it that people do this? Because they actually get involved in the action. They really think they're sitting there, you know, in the soccer field or in the cricket match. You know, catch it, catch it, catch it, they say, you know, in their armchairs in Sydney when a match is going on in Colombo. They can't hear you, but you get so involved, it's like you're there. Now, when you remember, you are sitting in the seat, and that's a movie on the screen. It was shot a long time ago. You can't influence it at all. The script has been written, it's been played out, it's been recorded. You can do absolutely nothing. That would help you let go. You would never shout then, you know, "Look out behind you, shoot, don't do that, do something else." Because now you have a distance between you and the movie. You're in the chair, the movie's over there, you're separated, detached. And as soon as you have that sense of detachment, it's easy to let go, it's just a movie. You don't get emotionally involved, which means it's very easy to turn it off. Can you turn off the movie? Can you turn off the cricket match when there's only one over to go and only three runs needed to win? Can you do? No, you don't, because you get very emotionally involved in it. When you're separated, it's very easy to let go. So the thing to do is look at these thoughts going on in your mind like they're not your thoughts, like they're what they usually say, clouds in the sky and you're sitting on the ground. Or they're just scenes of a movie and you're sitting in the armchair. You're distant from these things. You're not involved in them. Because as soon as you get involved in them, then you start shouting, "Look behind you, shoot, pass the ball." You get involved and you move the whole drama of your thoughts along and they never stop. So remember, if there's thoughts going on in your head, just, you know, there are thoughts out there, nothing to do with me. It's just some movie, some conditioned things going on. And I'm just listening to them. And if you do separate yourself from them, you soon realize this is a trash movie. Very easy. You know, one of the last movies I saw, I was on a flight and they had these screens come down so you couldn't avoid looking at it, and I didn't have any headphones, which was a nice thing. If you want to watch a movie, next time you watch a movie, turn off the sound. If it is in an aircraft, don't use the headphones. So watch the movie without the headphones. It's a really different experience. Because the movie I was watching, or I saw it, was watching about, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of it, was this movie called Armageddon. And if you remember that movie, apparently there was an asteroid hurtling down to Earth. And the Earth was right in its path. It was going to destroy the whole planet. And a couple of heroes. They were actually bad guys. But, you know, they were as heroes. Really violent. They didn't keep any precepts at all. But nevertheless, they went off into some spacecraft, and one of them, they landed, you know, quite safely on this asteroid or meteor, whatever it was. And the other one, something went wrong with the vehicle, and they hit sort of the asteroid, and there were sparks and flames, explosions everywhere. And then it rolled down some cliff and exploded again. And then it went down some crevasse, sparks, flames going everywhere. The whole thing was exploding. Like, you know, not a car crash once, like a car crash 10 or 15 times with flames and everything going all over the place. And then the spacecraft came to a halt. And it was silent. And then among the wreckage, he saw a little hand come up. And then the hero pulled himself up. It wasn't that he wasn't even scarred. His hairstyle was still perfect. It was so funny. I just burst out laughing and had to be told by the flight attendants to be quiet. Spoiling the movie. It was crazy. I mean, just how could you actually believe that sort of rubbish? But nevertheless, when you have all the music, you really get into it, and all the sound and the bangs and stuff, and then everything goes quiet, and then just the whatever it is, the hero arises, you know, perfect. Not even a drop of sweat on him, no soot marks, you know, totally impossible, but, you know, it's a movie, okay. But when you see just what rubbish it is, then you compare it to the thoughts in your head. They're exactly the same quality most of the time. But we don't have the emotional involvement, we don't see that. And, you know, the music, you know, gives you that emotional involvement into the movie. Take the music off. And it's absolutely rubbish. Impossible. Cannot happen. So that's a good way of actually letting go of these thoughts. And we're also letting go of our thoughts by just relaxing. Now, seeing the negativity in the thoughts, they're useless, is lessening their value. And instead, we increase the value of silence. And it's a natural law of the mind. Whatever it thinks is more important, it will incline towards. If you have some problem you want to solve, if you really think it's important, you will not be able to stop thinking about it. So how do you stop thinking about it? Take away its importance. It's not important right now, that problem. The world will go on without me. I am not that essential, know, to the safety of this planet, that I have to keep checking my emails. The world will go on quite well without you, as will your family. I love saying the story of when in Jerusalem the doctors went on strike for 3 or 4 weeks. And during that 3 or 4 weeks, when the doctors weren't doing their work, the death rate plummeted in the hospitals of Jerusalem. Not as many people died when the doctors were on strike. Actually, it's a very interesting piece of research. You know, when we get involved, we usually tend to mess things up more. So the best thing you can do for your family is leave them alone for a week and let them get on with their life. And they usually do very, very well. So you don't have to get involved. So when you take the value away from thinking and give it to silence, isn't silence beautiful? Just being here. You've got this gorgeous Jhana Grove Meditation Retreat Center. Some of you had to beg your boss for leave to get here. You've had to cajole and make deals just to get to this place. Now you're here. Enjoy it as much as you possibly can. And you've just come for such a long distance. Now you're here. Don't think of home when you're here. You can think of home when you get back. Don't waste a moment when you give value to being here. Then you find it's much easier to be silent, to be in the present moment. When you think it's more important to think about this and think about that, when these other things take greater importance, of course, your mind will go to those. So, in order to stop those thoughts, take away the value and put the value in silence. Don't you want to get enlightened? Don't you want to be healthy? You know, a lot of times people do really good meditation when they're really sick. If they've got cancer, then, oh my God, I'm going to die. You know, I better meditate or else this is it. You know, the coffin is right in front of me. I better do something. Have you ever noticed that some kids, only the 2 or 3 days before their exams, that's when they really start studying. Oh my God, it's coming soon. So I better get to work. So a lot of times people who are really desperate become great meditators. They got no choice. The value of silence becomes really important, and all the thinking, all the planning just loses its importance. So don't wait till you've got cancer. Don't wait till the coffin is coming. Just do it now. Silence is so beautiful. And hopefully, each one of you, that some moments in the past, 3 or 4 days, you've had these moments of silence. Oh, wonderful being here. It's a beautiful place. And you're just so happy and content to be here. Remember that. And then silence will be so important to you. You say, no, I can't, don't want to think. I'm enjoying the silence even more. So this becomes the preparation. So I should have mentioned the main way of being silent is just, as well as taking away the importance from thought and giving the importance to silence, is just relaxing. Because when you're relaxing, what I've been teaching the last few days, being kind for, you find the thoughts get less and less. And it's not because you are doing anything or you're moving the importance away from thinking to silence. It's not because you're detaching. This is the natural way to be silent. You're just relaxing. You're being more peaceful. The mind is not being agitated. It does become like the glass of water, which has been put down, and naturally by itself, it's got no agitation. All thoughts are just agitation of the mind. That's all it is. It's not really important. It's just the mind is unstable. It's got waves on it. It thinks. That's what thinking is, an instability of your mind. So this, what I've been teaching for 3 days, should have slowed down the thinking quite a lot by really working on the cause of that thinking. So it doesn't matter how silent you are, even if you're still thinking a lot, I don't care. But now, if it really hasn't got deep yet, now you might start to choose to watch the breath. Yeah, it is doing something. But I often advise people, even the monks, it's not that disturbing to do a little thing at the beginning of the meditation. It's when you get very deep, doing something always disturbs and is not recommended at all. Especially when you get to places like the nimittas. Please don't do anything once you've got the nimittas. That will always disturb it. Any doing is always counterproductive. But at the earlier stages of meditation, you can do a little stuff if you want. It's best not to do anything, but if you want to, because that's your habit, and you get really frustrated when you've got nothing to do, then watch the breath. Choose to watch the breath. So how do you watch your breath? Number one, please put aside all of those mischievous teachings of having to watch the breath at the tip of your nose or at the belly or somewhere else. You know why? Because once when I first started learning meditation, they told me to watch the breath at the tip of my nose, which was okay for a month or two. But then we had hay fever season, and because my father was an asthmatic, I got some of his genes, and I get hay fever. So when it got to the time of hay fever, I was looking at the tip of the nose for my breath, and I couldn't find any breath there because my nose was stuffed. It was blocked. How can any breath be coming up and down your nose when it's full of guck? So I thought, oh my God, I can't meditate. Maybe I'll have to wait for another 2 months, and then when the hay fever season's gone, then I can start meditating. And for me, I thought it was a big problem. It turned out to be a great benefit in the end. But then I learned of the Burmese method. You watch your tummy. You watch your belly go up and down. I thought, great. Now I can meditate all year round. But then I became a monk. And the next problem happened. Because if you watch your belly, especially maybe about 5, 6 o'clock in the afternoon, then that is so close to your stomach. You start to feel hungry. I want something to eat. It's just too close. So that never worked either. I started thinking of my tummy. I was a young guy, okay? When you're young, it's really, really hard not to eat in the afternoon or evening. When you're my age, it's not that bad. But, you young guys, or girls, and I really sort of feel for you because, you know, you're always hungry. So, anyway, instead of watching your tummy or watching your tip of the nose, I was really in trouble. And you worked out for yourself. You know, you looked at what the Buddha said. The Buddha never said to watch the tip of the nose. The Buddha never said to watch the belly. It's not anywhere in the teachings of the Buddha. He said to watch the breath. And I was smart enough to think, I'll just watch the breath. I don't have to watch the nose. I don't have to watch the tummy. I just have to watch the breath. So I just watch the breath. So easy. Even when I have a stuffed nose, the breath was still doing something somewhere. So I just watch the breath go in. I watch the breath go out. So easy to do. Because you know sometimes you watch it here and it's not there. You watch it there, it's not there either. It's somewhere else. So I watch the breath wherever it happens to be. And when I teach new people who have never meditated at all in their life, it's so easy. I just tell them, please close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times. When you finish the 3rd out-breath, open your eyes again. But please carry on breathing. And everyone can do that. Even people who have never meditated at all in their life. And then I ask them, how did you know you were breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out? How did you know that? And they can't actually put it into words often, but they know they were breathing in, they know they're breathing out. Exactly, that's what you watch when you do breath meditation. None of them watched them the tip of the nose or the belly, because I never gave them that instruction to begin with. I just said, watch your breath. Anyone can do that, because that's the natural way you watch the breath. You just watch the breath. And the other thing I can say is that a lot of time when you don't do anything, things come to you. You know, I didn't ask for a glass of water, but it just came to me. See, it works. When you open your heart, everything drops into your hand, even glasses of water. Now, when you do that natural method of breath meditation, it really helps because from the very beginning I wasn't focused on the body. I wasn't focused on the tip of the nose. I wasn't focused on the belly. I wasn't focused on the body. I was focused on the breath, which meant the body could mostly disappear. Later on I realized how fortunate it was to have that stuffed nose so I didn't get caught in watching the tip of my nose. That would have just tied me to the body. So for each one of you, just watch the breath wherever it happens to be. Now that takes a bit of doing and choosing at first. But please, even though you're doing something, please always remember the kindness and the sort of the mindfulness. Be aware, but be kind to your breath. In other words, don't force the breath. And if your mind disappears, or if either your awareness disappears, you go thinking of something else, please never scold yourself. Never think, I am hopeless. I'm useless. I can't do this meditation. Maybe I'm not meant to be a Buddhist. Maybe I should convert to Islam or Christianity or something. In Christianity, you can eat 3 meals a day. You can drink alcohol. You can eat processed grass. Cow. I don't think like that. It's just a matter of time. Just be very kind. Don't forget the kindness. If you're kind to the mind will settle down. But if you're fierce to the mind and judgmental, then you just create more waves on the glass of water and you'll find it'll be harder to stop the thinking. So please always, even if you're doing breath meditation, be very soft. I like to, when I did that breath meditation, I like to look at my breath like a friend. This breath was my best friend. It's been keeping me alive ever since I was born. Even when I go to sleep, it still keeps going in and out without fail. So when I looked upon my breath like a friend, not like a slave, the whole attitude changed. So often we look on our body like a slave, pushing it around, making it do things, forcing it to do things, even though it's uncomfortable and painful. We really mistreat our body. Even worse, we mistreat our brain. always making it think, make decisions when it says, no, I don't want to do anything anymore. I want to rest. I want to go to sleep. No, brain. You've got work to do. We're going to work. I often wanted to start a new society. We've already got the Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Children. We've got the Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. I want to start the Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Brains. And I think you would be the first people. Maybe not, but there'll be a lot of people who'll be prosecuted for brain cruelty. You can understand what I mean by brain cruelty. You've been so cruel to your poor brains. So be kind to them and be kind to your breath. When it's a friend, it's so easy to stay with. Just changing the attitude from it being a slave, you want to breath, you go in this way, go in that way, you stay. Changing the attitude to regard it with a friend, with kindness, is so easy to stay with the breath. Oh, beautiful breath. You're really nice. It's so good to me. Bring all this wonderful oxygen into my body, which I really need. You take all these waste products out. You keep doing that day in, day out, without fail. Oh, I'm just so grateful to you, breath. And I start thinking like that, and straight away the breath becomes all really nice. It's just like anyone else. If you really appreciate them, respect them, they show kindness back and they stay with you. They hang out with you. So that's what I do with my breath. I'm just kind to it. And that means you can actually do something. You can get to stages of meditation. So first of all, you relax the body. Then you get into the present moment. Then you get into silence. Then you get aware of the breath going in, going out. So then, great, I know where I am now. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm making progress. The trouble with stages, though, that some of you don't even get even past the first stage and you get a bit depressed. I've been here and I still can't even be in the present moment. Oh, God, I'm hopeless. I'm terrible. No, don't ever think like that. The trouble with stages, yeah, I mean, they do give you some encouragement, but they can also give you a lot of frustration. A lot of time people say, oh, I've been on stage 4 for the last 2 years, I can't get to stage 5. That's the problem with stages. Because you want to get further, that disturbs the mind and stops you getting further. But at least it gives you sort of something to do. So you're with the breath, breathing in, breathing out. So simple. Minute after minute after minute after minute. Just watching the breath. Nothing to do in the whole world. At peace, free from all your burdens and troubles. Now, a lot of people go to sleep there. Well, they get frustrated. Nothing's happening. What should I do next? And the reason is because there's not enough happiness in the meditation. You know that, you know, in the evening I tell a lot of jokes and make funny comments about the questions, some of which are really serious. I apologize if you wrote a serious question and I gave a funny answer afterwards. It does happen. But the whole purpose is actually to bring a bit more happiness and joy into the meditation retreat. That is why I do the 3 over-the-top sadhus, to bring some happiness. Which is why I teach the 20 push-ups in the morning. Do you do the 20 push-ups in the morning? When you first wake up? You know what the 20 push-ups are? Stand in front of the mirror in your bathroom. 2 fingers either side of the mouth. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You've got to exercise those muscles on the side of the mouth. How on earth can you smile if you don't have exercise? Look, if you're going to go and play tennis, you've got to exercise push-up weights to get strong muscles. If you're going to be happy, you've got to exercise these muscles. So do 20 push-ups every morning. To get these muscles strong so you can be happy. Preparation. So I do this to bring up joy and happiness because I know how important that is in the meditation. When you're watching the breath, it can be really boring after a while. I'm boring. What am I doing this for? Nothing is happening. And you go off to sleep or you go fantasizing, you get up and do something else. You have to try and make the breath fun, joyful. A lot of times all it is like appreciating just how beautiful this breath can be, just how peaceful and calm it is. Have you appreciated this jhana grove? How beautiful it is, how tranquil. Everything is really nicely set up. You've got this beautiful forest around you. The sunshine can be so delightful, especially at this time of the year. If you live here for too long, you take it for granted. Just jhana grove, that sort, just the trees. No, Danny, you've been here for so many years. Is it really beautiful? I remember when, for example, Bianca, when you first came here, you were just so... I remember you sitting out with a cup of tea, just watching, saying, this is amazing, this is wonderful. Because when you're first here, you can really see things. Beautiful. Trouble is, when we get too used to things, we take it for granted. And it takes a bit of effort to notice the beauty and not to take it for granted. And that's a little bit of effort to see the beauty in this breath. It takes a bit of effort, choice, to notice this breath going very smoothly in and smoothly out. You feel so tranquil. Compare it to when you're at work, when you're struggling in the traffic, when you're a monk and somebody is asking for some advice about their marriage, which is going pear-shaped. Oh, that really gives me headaches. When I'm watching the breath, no headache at all. Perfectly peace. I'm free from all the questions, free from having to do anything. Totally free, just watching the breath go in and go out. Oh, it's just so nice because I appreciate it. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be totally free. No one is asking me to do anything. I don't have to perform. I don't have to live up to anybody's expectations. I can just watch a breath and be perfectly at ease. And if you have the right attitude towards the breath as it goes in and goes out, it becomes really nice. Sometimes it's just getting that first experience of the beauty of the breath, the delight, the happiness in it. Just getting that first one. It's like lighting a match and then the bush is on fire. Just lighting, don't do that in this bush, by the way, because it's very dangerous. But in your mind, as soon as you get a tiny bit of happiness, you say, oh, this breath actually is really wonderful. This is really great, being peaceful. You know, the bliss of just having nothing to do. You start to appreciate that. So I ask people, if you're watching the breath and it's not becoming delightful, try this little trick. And it works really well. If you're watching the breath, breath going in, breath going out, breath going in, but it's sort of bland, it's got no taste or flavor to it, take your awareness away from your breath. Put it on your mouth and smile. Fake a smile if you can't make one. That's a fake smile. When you fake a smile, straight away, that sort of is psychological. It gives a little bit of happiness to the mind. It's like you're looking at the happy, the ridiculous, the fun part of your mind. And my goodness, it really works. I learned this technique, you know, even when I was at college. Because I remember, you know, I was a bit stupid. No, not a bit stupid, a lot stupid, I've got to be honest. You had all these clubs and societies over in Cambridge. I did join the Buddhist Society in Cambridge. This is another story. I love telling this story. That at these, they have these societies fairs at this university. All these clubs, everything from fox hunting, you know, to tiddlywinks, to the Buddhist Society of Cambridge. And I was a Buddhist for many years, but I was the only Buddhist I knew. I didn't know anywhere else, and I was too stupid to look in the telephone directory and look for a Buddhist temple. They were there. So I was the only Buddhist I knew when I went to university and I saw the Buddhist Society of Cambridge. It's the Buddhist Society. They gave talks. They taught meditation. Yes! So I went up to the store and said, I want to join. And the guy behind the store, look, this is Buddhism. You don't need to join. Just come and see. See if you like it. Investigate. And you can join later. And I said, no, I'm already a Buddhist. I want to join. He said, no, you don't have to. And I was really first. I want a join. Here's my £1. Join me up. And I was really fierce. And that became one of my best friends, Bernard Carr. He was also a physicist. He became professor of physics at London University. He's just retired. Still keep in touch. And it's amazing how you make your friends. So that friendship started with an argument. He wouldn't join me up. And I insisted I want to join. But But one of the other clubs I joined was more stupid, because they were giving out this free sherry. These are times when I used to drink, and you know, You're a young man, anything for free, especially if it's booze, you know, you go off for it. And I must have drank too much because I found myself signed up for the boat club. That was serious work. I'm not into sport. I'm never really into sport. I didn't have that sort of that killer instinct to win. I just wanted to have good fun. So anyway, there you were, rowing in a boat in the river, and it's really hard work. If you've ever done, you know, rowing in an eight, that's really hard work. And I was getting exhausted. And the coach was on the towpath. He had this big megaphone. He shouted out to me. He said, "No, take a look at your face. You're making an ugly face. Smile," he shouted. And the one thing that, you know, as a young man, you're willing to try anything, you know, just to see. You're experimenting with life. So I smiled. And as soon as I smiled and stopped putting an ugly face, that oar was much easier to pull, had more energy. And thank you so much for teaching me that. Because that's the same everything in life. If you're pushing a wheelbarrow, if you're washing the dishes, if you're cutting up the vegetables, and you say, "Oh, what do I have to cut up the vegetables for? You know, I'm not a vegetable. In my home in Singapore, I've got maids to do this. I shouldn't be cleaning up the toilets. You know, I'm a rich girl. You know, even when I was small, I never had to wash the toilets. You know, the maid did all that stuff." If you're like that, that toilet is very difficult to clean. But if you smile, "Oh, what wonderful good karma this is to wash the toilets. Oh, wonderful, I can, at last, you know, I can sort of clean up my room. At last, I can chop some vegetables. Yes, this is..." You get more energy. It's much easier to do. Now, I transfer that well-known technique into meditation. You're watching the breath. If I could take a video of you, you can understand why you're not getting any happiness. You're watching horizontal mouth. It's not good enough. So you take the awareness away from the breath, put it on your face, and really smile. A real one, as much as you can. Then you go back to your breath, and it's happy. That's all it takes. And once it starts to get happy, you really get into the happiness of meditation. Again, please, I have to apologize for monks, because some monks, the way they teach meditation, I'm just so lucky that I wasn't paying attention to them. Otherwise, I'd have got lost too. Now, I followed Ajahn Chah, was a much better teacher. Some always say, if you start to get happy in meditation, stop it. You're not supposed to be happy. You'll get attached. This is about suffering. We've got to know pain. Real monks, real nuns, they're not happy. They're the ones who face suffering head on, who endure pain. There are people like that. I know them. They're crazy. But then, you know, you had a happy monk like an Ajahn Chah. And then you went to check out for yourself. And if anybody has any doubts at all about the requirement of happiness in meditation, there's a great sutra of the Buddha. I often quote the Dhammacetya Sutra. It's usually in English, it's called Monuments to the Dhamma, where King Pasenadi, one of the Buddha's chief disciples, went to see the Buddha just before he was to pass away. And he bowed at the Buddha's feet. He actually kissed the Buddha's feet. And then the Buddha said, "What are you up to? You're a king, for goodness sake." And he said, "Just how much I love having you as a teacher. And how much I adore coming to this monastery, the famous Jeta Grove, Jetavana Monastery. I love coming here." "Why?" said the Buddha. "Because all the monks in this monastery are always smiling and happy," said the king. A great snapshot of what it was like in a Buddhist monastery in the time of the Buddha, where the Buddha was living. All the monks are smiling and happy. And the Buddha's response was, "Yes, that's what you can expect when the monks are meditating properly and getting insights. They should be happy and smiling." So it's things like that. So it's okay to be happy as a monk. You know, in Hong Kong, I've been there a few times, go to this monastery, very nice monastery. They have Mahayana monks, Tibetan monks, all types of monks there. And nuns as well. And we don't discriminate. You know, as long as you're in robes, you know, reasonably right colour, that'll do. Come in. So this is one Chinese Mahayana nun. And after I gave the talks and the meditation like I give here, just before I left, she came up to me and said, "Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you." So what, for teaching the Dhamma? No, for smiling and laughing. And he said, "Because up until you came, you're a well-known monk, up until you came, I was not allowed to smile in public. Every time I smiled or laughed, people said, 'You're not a proper nun. It's not appropriate for Mahayana nuns to smile. Wipe that smile off your face.'" He said, "Now you've come along, I could smile. I can laugh. Thank you so much." I remember that really sort of disappointed me. But in some traditions, you weren't allowed to smile and be happy. It's as if, as a Buddhist monk or a nun, you had to be miserable. If I'm going to rebel against anything, I'm going to rebel against being miserable. And it's also because that's not what's in the Buddhist texts. And also, you look at something like the Anapanasati Sutta. 5th and 6th stages. Breathing in, breathing out. You experience piti and sukha. This is joy. This is bliss. This is what is supposed to happen. You're breathing in, you get blissed out. You breathe out, "Oh, this is just so nice." Now that happens naturally. But I'm giving you things to do now. Just to, you know, to pander to your control freak attitudes. So see if you can breathe in beautifully. One of the great monks, still alive, Ajahn Gunha. Many of you know him in Thailand. He spent a year over here, a rage retreat here, over in Bodhinyana, many, many, many years ago. He always used to teach meditation. Very, very simply. He said, "Breathe in, sabha." Sabha means really nice, easy, beautifully. And breathe out, sabha. I can't imitate the way he said, sabha. But the way he said it, I just wanted to follow. It was just so attractive. He said, "That's what you do. You just breathe in as beautiful, as sensual, as delightful, as much fun as you possibly could." We might even, okay, let's do an exercise now. You can try that. Don't, what are you changing your posture for? You were happy before. Leave it alone. All you want to do is I want you to breathe in as delightfully as you possibly can. Okay, now breathe in, sabai. Oh, this is nice. And breathe out. Oh, sabha. Now that wasn't that good. Try again. Really get into it. And breathe out. Really get into the delight. Oh, yeah. Now, it's not that hard to do with a bit of effort. Instead of breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in. Just like those sadhus, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. No wonder people fall asleep. You put this beautiful energy and happiness into just one in-breath and one out-breath. So that is what you must do if you're going to do anything in the meditation. See if you can put this beautiful energy and happiness into one in-breath and energy into the out-breath. Make a smile. And you find, you just started off, and the breath actually is really nice. And because it's joyful and happy and you're having a good time, number one, you don't fall asleep. How can you fall asleep when you're having a good time? I remember just when I was just turned 18, I was traveling around the United States, got bored because it was just in the United States, it's the United States. I went to South America. No, Central America. That was really interesting. Real jungles. And real indigenous people with no clothes on in dugout canoes going up this jungle like you'd expect Tarzan to swing out any moment. It was that type of jungle. And but I remember just having to go on this boat ride along the Caribbean coast. You know, left at midnight, so you couldn't go to sleep. And you were really tired, hadn't slept all night, but to see the dawn come up over the Caribbean coast. Wow, that's so gorgeous. And I remember just at the time, I can't go to sleep. This is just too delightful, just too beautiful. I just cannot miss this. The beauty was so strong that no way you could have any sleepiness. And always remember that. Because even if you're tired, sometimes the breath is so delightful, no more beautiful than a dawn over the Caribbean coast. It was just no way you can just take your eyes off this. It really grabs you. So when the delight comes up, all effort from that point is not necessary anymore. You don't need to do any will or choosing at all because it's just too much fun. It just grabs you. You don't have to grab it. The breath going in, oh, this is so nice, so beautiful, delightful. And that is the time when people miss their breakfast and lunch. Sitting here in this hall, happened many, many times, they're sitting here, and they know it's lunch. They know if they miss this lunch, they're not going to get anything till tomorrow morning. But they're watching their breath. It's just too much fun. No choice of going hungry or watching my breath. I'm staying with my breath. It's a no-brainer. You can't stop it. It's that delightful. I like saying that because that gives you an understanding of just how delightful the breath comes at this stage. It's nice. It's beautiful. Gorgeous. Yeah. When you get into those meditations, great, you're off. You're having a great time. You sit for many hours. And that's just the beginning of the happiness. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come. Once you get into it, it starts to really build up. Because you have happiness with the breath, you don't need to put any effort. You can't put any effort in. But because you're not putting any effort in, you are still. It gets more and more still. Energy goes into the mind, gets happier and happier and happier, you get blissed out. Happiness gets so strong, these incredible, beautiful nimittas come up. Now, not just the ordinary nimittas. Yeah, I see a light, but there's no happiness. No, the real big ones. The bliss ones. The ecstasy ones. Wow. Those sorts of ones. The sorts of ones that, wow, I don't think I can handle this. You can handle this. You won't say, oh, I'm going to go blind. No, you can't. You don't go blind. Wow, I can't take so much happiness. I found from personal experience, there's no limit to the bliss a human being can endure. You can endure even more bliss. Isn't that interesting? Bliss out beyond your wildest dreams. The bliss indicator goes beyond extreme, ultra extreme, until it goes totally off the scale of bliss. Are you interested? Would you like? Of course you do. Human beings like pleasure. But this is really beautiful pleasure. This is what happens when you start on this little path. Once the delight starts, then it's off. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So please, as a warning, never get scared. Sometimes people have got the bliss coming up and they get afraid. Oh, you got so close. I know what you just missed. Don't do that scary business again. You're perfectly safe. Perfectly safe. Ajahn Brahm is here. You've got nothing to fear. He's going to have a great time. You're not going to lose anything, I should say. But sometimes people ask me at this stage, is there any danger in these bliss states of meditation? And there is one danger, but one danger alone. I have to warn you. And I think it's only fair to warn you. If you really get into these bliss states a lot, you're very likely to lose your hair. But some of you already lost your hair, so you've got nothing to lose. You might as well go for it. Well, that's actually what happens. So, in today's talk, I've given you a little bit of something to do. The breath meditation. And I've taught you straight away, don't watch the breath at the tip of the nose or the tongue. You just watch the breath. Which is, you know, is the breath going in, is the breath going out? Still keep, you know, some of what I taught earlier, which is the best. Be kind to your breath. Use kindfulness. Don't control it, otherwise it will disappear. If it's going a bit dull, smile. Make a smile. And just, or breathe in, sabha. Oh, yeah. Deliberately do that. And then you get the fun starting. You only have to do that a little bit at the beginning. It's just, you know, getting the fire started. Once it's started, it takes off by itself. And then you're breathing in, it's all so nice, breathing out so nice. Because it's beautiful, it blocks everything else out. You're having fun, you don't want to go anywhere. And any sounds outside, people moving, rustling this and banging the doors, you don't hear them. In the same way, you don't hear things when a movie is being played on the TV. Or when the cricket is on, and your wife says, darling, the dinner's ready. Please, you know, if you've got a husband who likes his sport and he's watching some soccer match or cricket match or something, and you go and talk to him, he's not ignoring you. He can't hear you. His sense of sound is cut off. It's totally absorbed in TV jhana. They just can't hear you. Now, this is what happens when you're really absorbed and interested in enjoying what's going on, say with your breath, you just can't hear outside. So this is what happens when you really get some joy coming up in the meditation. And just, you carry on like that, and soon the joy gets so big you can't feel the breath anymore. And you see these incredible lights coming. Oh yeah. Now you're buzzing along. So that's today's talk. Doing a little by watching the breath. Okay, any questions before we go on to the interviews? So it's easy to do. So have fun and see what happens next. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yes, do. Very good. Have a wonderful morning.